Leonard Grossberg, Environmental Activism for a Lifetime, Episode 22, Tiny Climate Challenge Podcast.
I'm Mayela Manassian, your host on the Tiny Climate Challenge Podcast. This is a podcast for busy people who want to save the planet by completing one simple eco challenge at a time. Let's do this. Please visit tinyclimate.com to access all episodes, show notes, freely subscribe, and contact us.
Now, for the first time in my life, I truly believe my dreams are possible, possible.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mayela Manassian. I'm your host of Tiny Climate Challenge. And the topic of our podcast today is all about environmental activism. Today, I've invited Leonard Grossberg as our guest challenger to talk all about the many different ways that we can make a positive impact in the world through our activism. So, welcome, Leonard.
Woohoo! Thank you for having me.
Why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself? Just tell us all about your amazing self.
All right. I'm 66 years old. I've been a California native since I was born here, but lived a few years in Texas. But I've been involved in the environmental health field for over 30 years. Got involved with being a registered sanitarian back in the 70s, and then a registered environmental health specialist. And I was able to land a wonderful job working for the city of Vernon. And 25 years later, I retired as director of environmental health just a few years ago. So I'm well versed on environmental issues, environmental impacts, climate studies, and my background really went into not only the hazardous materials aspects, the hazardous waste, also solid waste, but that kind of steered me toward the climate action and the climate crisis. After I retired, I found myself with a lot of free time. So it was a matter of, what do I do with my time? What can I do to make things continue for me, get that satisfaction of continuing that work? So over the last 4 years that I've been retired, I've dabbled in a few things. I've had my fun times. You know, I get to do umpiring with Little League Baseball, and I do a lot of traveling around the world. But when I'm not traveling or doing that stuff, I've devoted my time and some of my efforts into giving back to the community. So I've gotten involved with the Sierra Club, some of the local environmental action groups up in the North County. I live in Oceanside, north of San Diego. And in the last year and a half or two, I've been really involved with my local government, the city of Oceanside. We've gone through some changes. They've gone through some development. And I've been very active with the Sierra Club and some other environmental groups in lending my expertise and my knowledge in going to city council meetings, going to protests and filing letters, giving them my concerns with regards to projects. And it's been very rewarding. It has.
I think that's amazing. And thank you, so by the way, for everything that you do. A lot of people that are interested or care about what's happening in their community don't always know how to get started. And so while it's true that you and I both have environmental backgrounds and we know a little bit more, I guess, than the average citizen, and that doesn't mean that anyone can't get involved in doing this type of work.
Absolutely correct. I belong to this local group that's part of the Sierra Club. And what they do is they hold a monthly meeting at somebody's house locally. So they'll put out an agenda, so you can look at the agenda and say, well, wow, that interests me, or that might be something exciting to get involved with. And you can just show up to the meetings. You can listen. You don't have to participate. You don't have to give an opinion or your money. And if you want to get involved in a project, you raise your hands and you say, what can I do? How can I help? And you commit as little or as much as you want. So that's the nice thing about it. You can start slow and you can say, you know what, why don't I help you with the mailers, or let me help you with getting petitions signed, things of that nature. And then it grows from there. The more excited you are, the more committed you are to a project, the more involved you can be. And it works around your schedule. So it's kind of nice.
Well, the reason why I invited you on the show as a challenge guest is because, and thank you for sharing your age with us, because I want folks to know that it's never too late to get started. And so even though you and I had these wonderful careers as environmentalists, I don't know if this was true for you, but I never felt quite comfortable being an activist when I was working as an environmentalist. Because I was always told, you know, do the bare minimum. I hate to say this, but and I'm not saying this is true for every local government, but in the agencies that I worked for, I was always told, do the bare minimum to meet regulations, but don't go above and beyond. You know, don't break the budget. Don't go crazy. Like, just do what you need to do to get the job done. But I always felt like there was more that we could and should be doing. And so that's kind of what sparked my activism. And so I'm just curious, what was that like for you when you were on the inside, when you were working inside City Hall as an environmental scientist, as opposed to like the, you know, what you're doing now?
That's a great question, because you're absolutely right. And if you've ever worked in any kind of city or county government, that's the mantra. Do the bare minimum that you have to and don't do much else. You start doing too much and you get looked down upon by your fellow employees. And in some cases, you'll even get your supervisors that'll say, slow down, don't do so much. Because then it means they haven't scheduled enough work, or it means that they're not doing their job or something. So they don't want to make waves. And it was interesting where I worked, and I got from the county, I went to private industry, and then I went into a city job. And the city job was completely different, because the who you answer to is different. You don't have, you know, the board of directors or whatever, or these city councils. What we did, we answered to my director, who answered to a city manager. And his mantra was simple: don't embarrass the city, don't make waves, don't even mention the city. So we were in a position where we could move forward and make the city a shining light, make it a something that was leading the way, and in a positive way, say, look what the city of Vernon, that's the city I worked with, or look what we're doing here in this city. And they were saying, no, mm-hmm. don't make those waves. I don't want anybody scrutinizing us because we're doing good or bad. So I was nominated to be, you know, president of an environmental group. And I said, I'm not allowed to. Because then that gives me the title, that gives me a position, and then I'm now in the forefront of whatever happens, good or bad, the city's going to be looked at that way. So for many years, until we had a change of management, we couldn't hold titles or positions. So I ended up as vice chair of the committee instead of the chair, and eventually our city members were able to do that. And then when I became director, it was one of those things where I looked at my staff and I said, look, all of my staff was very excellent in everything they did. We had specialists in all these different fields, and I wanted to make sure that we could see the shining light that they were adding. You know, so I had one guy that was a food program manager, and he was writing all the food codes and all the changes to with regards to what was happening in the food code in the state of California. I had another guy that was an expert in stormwater. And he was, you know, when the regulations had to be written and what needed to be looked at with regards to stormwater quality in all of California, he was the one that was highlighting the guidelines of what we needed to do. And so on and so forth with each one of our specialists. And I wanted to make sure that each one of them got a little bit of credit. And in many ways, they didn't want the credit. They were kind of shy. They were really good at what they did. They didn't want the credit. But I said, well, you know, I need to let you know that I admire, I look forward to that. And I, as one of my employees, you're getting the credit.
Wow, that's great. And that's what makes you such a wonderful leader. And I wish that I could say that was true of most of the places I worked at. But I feel a little discouraged, actually. I mean, I spent 20 years in local government. And when I first got started, right out of college, I thought, I'm going to make a difference in this world. I'm going to, you know, have a huge impact. And then I got into local government, and all of a sudden, I felt like I just kept bumping up against brick walls, like people just telling me, like, whoa, slow down, like, you're going too fast.
Yes.
Or, But that's okay. And the reason why I bring all this up and why I'm glad that we're having this honest conversation about what it's like to work for a local government and how to become activated or active, even if you work for local government or you don't. We need folks who care about the environment at all levels. We need just regular citizens who care about the environment to speak up, to show up, to become activists in their communities. We need young environmental scientists, new graduates that are coming out. If you're a youth, if you're in high school, if this is something that you care about, we need you speaking up, showing up, going to city council meetings, writing your council members, getting involved with environmental clubs like the Sierra Club and other nonprofits, because it takes everyone. It takes a village, as they say, or a community of folks to really get involved. And so what I felt and what I always tell people is that even though I was doing my job to the best of my ability, from the inside, even though I knew that I could do more and better, but I always pushed as much as I possibly could. And, you know, maybe I rankled, is that the right term? Rankled a few feathers?
Yes. Okay.
Sorry, it's happy hour over here. So, and I got to just back up for a second and say, I am so blessed that Leonard is he's a dear friend of mine. And so that's the real reason why we have him on the show today. But yes, I ruffled. That's the phrase. I ruffled
a few. And wrinkled. Those feathers got mushed.
That's right. And so what I decided is that, you know, if my voice, you know, if they're trying to like tell me to just quiet down a little bit, that's okay. I can live with that. But when I get out of City Hall, when I get out of here, when my 9 to 5 is over, or it wasn't really 9 to 5, it was like 8 to 6.
time to shout,
yes,
shout
exactly.
To the sky.
Right. I'm going to do whatever it is that I can to get involved with groups outside of City Hall. Because the pressure needs to come from the inside and the outside as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you have to understand something. If you have an issue with something, you're listening to the news, you're watching something or reading in the paper, and you go, that's not right, that shouldn't be allowed, or why is that being allowed? We have a voice, you know, as adults and even as young adults, we have the rights, we can change the vote, but you can voice your opinion by going to those meetings. The city councils have to have public hearings. They have to put the project forth, and they have to explain it, and they have to allow the public to comment on it. And you have every right to question any aspect of it, whether it's the environmental impact, whether it's the traffic studies, whether it's the density, anything of that nature. And you can say, I don't like that project in my neighborhood. Or what are we going to do, since it's going to bring more traffic, with regards to putting in stop signs or putting in traffic lights? You know, they have to do a traffic study. What about the density? You know, does that mean that we're going to add another fire station, more police coverage, that kind of stuff? And those are all valid questions. And the public sometimes doesn't ask them, or the developer gets it pushed through without getting it resolved. And they, you know, the recent project I got involved with up in North County, they did an environmental impact. And a lot of the answers that they put forth, the developer put forth, is traffic is so bad right now that there's nothing we can do to make it any better, even though we're going to add 600 homes to the community. And everybody was scratching their heads and saying, you can't do that.
I'm scratching my head right now.
What do you mean? You can't do anything because it's already beyond the limits. You have to put forth some kind of some way of fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Enlarge, you know, so if you went from 2 lanes in each direction, go to 3 lanes, or add some kind of other traffic, you know, a way of fixing it.
Yes.
Add a transit system.
Exactly.
Put together a rail system or a bus system or some kind of a way of getting traffic in and out. You know, what's interesting, just recently in the city of Vista, they built these gorgeous condos and apartments and townhomes. Just beautiful. And the nice thing about it, it's half a block from downtown City Vista, which is where all the restaurants, where there's a movie theater, all kinds of shops. So it's walking distance. I mean, you can crawl. It's that close. But less than 200 yards from there is a city transit bus depot.
Mm-hmm.
So you can catch a train, you can catch a bus, you can get to the Oceanside Transit District, and then you're basically San Diego, Los Angeles, Orange County, everything's available. So you don't need a car.
Right.
So guess what? They didn't put parking in the building.
Ooh.
Minimal.
Yeah.
But they're basically saying, we're not providing parking. You want to come live in this place, you're going to be walking or biking or having one car per family, not two or multiple families in the condo.
And I think that's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it reduces the carbon footprint and it also promotes using mass transit or bicycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we actually just came back from a fantastic bike ride just now, all the way down the coast.
We put in, I'm going to guess because I haven't looked at the odometer that we had on the bikes, but we did about a 15 to 20 mile bike ride this afternoon.
It felt like it. Yeah. My legs are feeling it right now.
Yes.
but thankfully, most of it was flat.
Yes. It was a beautiful day in Coronado. We went all the way down the Strand to almost Imperial Beach.
Yes.
So, yep.
Well, I'm so grateful that we're having this conversation. The guest expert for this podcast episode is another good friend of mine. He's a climate reality leader. His name's Brian Etling. And what I love about him is that he does one act of leadership, probably more actually, but one act of leadership per day that he advertises, that he shares, I shouldn't say advertise, but he shares with us on social media. So he says, today I wrote a letter to my congressperson, or today I emailed my city council member, or today, you know, I took a hike in a park. In a beautiful park he lives up in Portland, Oregon, with my wife. So, I mean, those are all brilliant acts of leadership. He's showing us how he cares and protects the environment and our planet, you know, not only for current, but for future generations. And so I thought it would be great to have you on the show precisely, as I mentioned earlier, for the very same reason that you can dedicate your entire career to environmental service, which we both obviously have. But that doesn't necessarily make you an activist. And what I love is that when you retired, you became activated in a way that you hadn't before. And so I want to ask you, like, what was it? Was there something that happened in your city? Or because oftentimes it's typically when people get involved is when something hits close to home. But what was it exactly that inspired you to speak up?
Good question. You know, it just so happened that was the time. It was about two and a half years. I'd given myself a little bit of time from retirement just to do nothing, and I was getting bored. So I went to one of those Sierra Club meetings locally and started becoming active. You know, they wanted people to some help with collecting signatures or, you know, holding signs up and stuff. And I said, sure, I can do that. And then not long after that, in North County, San Diego, there was a proposal for a project called North River Farms, and that was in a mile and a half from my house. I can almost see it if there wasn't a hill in the way. And that's where they wanted to put in over 600 homes in a agricultural location. And they asked me, because they knew about my environmental background, he says, can you help us? And I said, what do you need? Let me look at this before I get committed. And I could see, since I've done environmental impact reports, I've reviewed them, I could see that there was all kinds of problems here, all kinds of issues that needed to be at least questioned. And let's like get them to answer them or to at least make an attempt to try to fix it. And that's when I got involved, because I said, this is easy. This is what I've done all my life. So we started doing letters to the council members, letters to the developers, and we started going to the council meetings, and we were speaking. We were saying, look, you're doing a project. It's supposed to be up and coming. Have you guys considered doing solar? And they all looked at me like the sun was in their eyes, you know? And it's just like, you're putting in a new project. We're already talking about the city going green and becoming its own power utility and stuff. And yet, you're not thinking of solar? You should, every single project in the city, I don't care if it's a small development of 4 units or 400 units, should have a component of green in it. Mm-hmm. And at least solar, at least that. And they just dismissed it. They're saying, no, it's not cost effective. I go, it will be.
Yeah.
It has to be. But anyway, so I started getting involved and started commenting on that. When the project came to a vote to the city council, We knew we had a battle in our hands because the council was saying we're going to approve this project, even though the planning department, the building department, and everybody that had comment on it said it's not viable, it's got faults, it's got problems, don't do it. So we went to a city council meeting, and I went, the council meeting was scheduled for 6. I showed up before 5, and it was already full.
Wow.
What had happened is the developer bussed in people from out of the city to take up all the seats so that the city residents couldn't enter and voice their opinions. So it was a CF, so if you guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, the meeting started at 6. The fire marshal did close the doors shortly thereafter. It was just packed, and people were out in the parking lot listening on speakers. And we were there. I was there till after 11:15. So for 5 hours, we heard comments. And instead of our normal 3 minutes of comments per person, they reduced it to 2 minutes. So we had to speak fast and we had to get our thoughts out. But we had a lot of people making their opinions. And at the end, even with all the opposition, all of the residents from the city were opposed to the project. All of the people that they bussed in said it's a great project. And the city council voted for the project.
Wow.
After 5.5 hours of testimony.
Okay, so, I was curious how this project ended up. So is it being built or where is it?
So what happened is we have some really smart people in the Sierra Club, and they're part of our group. And they got together with the Sierra Club attorneys and they said, the only way you can get this project stopped is you have 30 days to gather, I think it was 12,000 signatures. It was percentage of the voters or something like that. And you have to get it put on the ballot for November. So we only have 30 days to get the signatures. So we all started mobilizing and we all got the forms and we all started going out to restaurants, to the Thursday night markets and the morning markets and stuff, and begging people for signatures. We got them like that.
Wow.
We got more than enough signatures. It was put on the ballot, and by putting it on the ballot, it halted the project. It negated the vote of the city council approval of the project and said, no, this has to go to the voters. So that project is on hold until it goes to the voters this November 3rd. So it's important for everybody in North County to vote this November 3rd for many reasons. Not only local reasons, but federal and, you know, state and all the other reasons involved.
Our national election.
So, you know, and that's why I said you got to get involved. I was just talking with you earlier and with my wife. I'm going to find a group that needs people driven to vote on November 3rd for local elections, for the elections. I'm going to volunteer my time the entire day to drive people that need to go, regardless of who they're voting for. And obviously, you can't talk about politics when you're driving on voting day. But I want people to vote, and I'm going to help anybody that needs to vote get to the polling booth that day.
I think that's so honorable, actually. And thank you for everything that you do. It's amazing. Well, before we wrap up here, you know, we're in COVID times now. So, you know, there's a worldwide pandemic going on. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are feeling like they've been quarantined, they've been cooped up, and they want to do something to help because things are still going on. We still need to address issues, environmental issues. You know, the sky is a little cleaner now. Levels of air pollution have gone down somewhat. But now that we're reopening, you know, there's things that that still need to be addressed. So what can people do? What are your recommendations or suggestions for what people can do, even though we're kind of stuck at home a little bit more than we're used to?
You know, if we're stuck at home, that doesn't mean that we can't do things. We are more apt to be able to send an email or send a comment for local consideration to people. So there, you still have your voice electronically. I can't help to think the novel coronavirus 19, we know how it got its name. I always say that COVID-19 is the 19 pounds I gained since I've been in quarantine for the last 3 months. But there's a lot that still can be done. You know, I've been very selective. I've been quarantined 98% of the time for the last 3 months. I've just started going out a little bit in the last 10 days, but I'm still uncontrollably washing my hands all day long. I still wear a mask anytime I leave the house. And I do, you know, the social distancing. And my gym opened up last week. I'm not even thinking of going to the gym for a while. That's just, it's not on my list.
Yeah.
I've done very little socializing with outsiders. I know that Paul and Maella have been completely quarantined in their own home. They haven't seen anybody. So I know that coming here was not an issue. But even with family members, I've been, with the exception of my sons, and I'm going to go see my oldest this Sunday for Father's Day. And I told him, I'll come, but I'm wearing a mask and I want you to wear a mask.
Yeah, good for you.
That's just the way. I went to my brother's house to visit my mom for the first time in 3 months. And I made everybody wear a mask if they're going to be near me. I said, it's not worth the risk. And it's also my protection to you and your protection to me. It's a social thing. And the risk is death. It's not like, well, I can get a cold and miss a few days of work or lose a few days of pay. No. You get to my age and you have health issues or whatever. Thank God I don't. But what if I have to go visit my mom who's going to be 90 in a couple months, you know, and I give it to her? How would I feel because I was a carrier? Not going to happen.
And it's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Right. So thank you. I'm so glad that you brought that up because there is a whole controversy happening in our country right now around people refusing to wear masks. Which is like, that's somebody else's podcast show. We're not going to go there just now. But so people who are listening, who are at home, you know, that's all of us all over the world. There's still things going on and happening that need to be addressed. So we touched on some of them earlier. So let's maybe do a little quick brainstorm here. You can still stay connected with what's happening in your community. There's still city council meetings that you can watch online.
Most of them are being televised online because the city council is not even holding them in their chambers. Or many of the council members, half of them, let's say, are there and the other half are at a distant remote location. So you can still listen in online. You can still make your comments. You can either mail them in, email them in, or have them read online. Yes, you can.
And like you said earlier, you don't have to wait for 5-6 hours until your item comes up. You can actually just online, you can review what the agenda is, and you can see what the item is that you're interested in, and you just email your comment to a particular city council or all of the city council members on that topic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like you said, if you can't make the meeting and you don't have the time to watch the meeting, you can still submit your comments. Your comments are valid whether you do them the day of the meeting or the week before. And what I do is I email my comments to all the council members.
Which I think is the best way to go about it. But sometimes, you know, people have a favorite council member that they like. And
sure.
You know.
Sure.
In any case, so there's that. There's also, as you pointed out, getting involved with local environmental groups. So there's the Sierra Club here in San Diego. There's Surf Rider Foundation. We have Climate Action Campaign. There's just so many wonderful groups out there that are doing incredible work. So that's another way to get involved. Obviously, getting politically active is really important too, because all politics is local. And as you mentioned, there was that North River Farms development happening in your town.
Yes.
And your council members, or the majority of them, were supporting this project. So I think it is important to get involved politically and to help register people to vote. Also, I was on the Sierra Club's political endorsement committee. So there's a lot of political activism that kind of crosses over, intersects with environmental activism as well. So if you're more politically inclined, I recommend that people look into ways that they can get involved there. That's on the local level. Now, there's also, you have a congressman, you have a senator. There's ways to get involved on the federal level as well. So there's lots of different things that we can do.
Yes. And I've been politically active in the federal level, too, by supporting my local congressman, Mike Levin, when he was running for the 49th district.
He's the best.
He's wonderful.
He flipped the
49th. Yes. That's it. Yeah. Now he's up for re-election. So I've been keeping tabs on what he needs and how he's doing it. So he's looking at a hard fight. But it's interesting because He's keeping us safe in the 49th. You know, we've got the San Onofre plant there. We've got nuclear waste that needs to be dealt with. We've got a lot of local issues, and he seems to be very committed to it. So it's nice. You can get on his email page and keep tabs of what he's working on. He'll send you updates. You can send comments that you're interested in one item or two or something of that nature, and he'll let you know what's happening. So it's very important, you know, with your congressmen and your senators and stuff. And then let's not fool ourselves. We have a huge election coming up November 3rd, and I'm active with regards to other elections in other states and other issues because of what they impact nationally, you know, whether it's the climate, whether it's political issues, political views and stuff. This is probably the biggest election that I've ever had. And I've been voting since 72. So, yeah, you know, you get active. And when you feel, you know what, if you complain about things and you don't vote, then you don't have a right to complain about things. Because that's where your money and your wallet hit the pavement. You have every right to complain in this country, but you also have to be active. I have never missed a general election since 72. And even the primaries, with the exception of maybe one where there was like one or two items on the ticket and I was working, you know. But I'm just saying, the number of elections, I've always felt that it's a privilege, and you know, not only our right, but a privilege. So I take it very seriously. And I used to take my kids, you know, I used to have to stick them on my hip and go into the polling booth and say, here, hold a pen, now push this little button, hit that Chad, make sure it goes all the way through. and they've been in the polling booth and they remember these things, you know. And I said, this is political activism. Then it's an honor to be able to, in this country, to be able to have the freedom to go in and vote your voice, whether you win or lose. But if you don't vote, you don't have a voice.
So true. And I'm so glad that you brought up your kids, by the way, because I didn't want this to go unmentioned. But I actually know one of his kids, Nick Grossberg, really well. He's near and dear to my heart. And that's another point that I wanted to make, that you can be an environmental activist by raising your kids to have an understanding of caring for the environment. And Nick is a wonderful environmentalist as well. He got a degree in public health?
He got a degree in environmental science.
Oh, environmental science.
He started off in nursing.
Yeah.
And then he said, no, I think I want to take a different track. And he ended up getting a degree in environmental science. He's looking at possibly getting his master's. He's halfway through a public health master's. So he's working on it. But with the good fortune of the people and friends that I have, like Myella, Nick was able to get an internship. Was it City of Encinitas?
Yes.
And he did stormwater?
Yes.
Oh, he loved that job.
We worked together.
Talk about going to work and having to go to the beach and take water samples.
It was a rough life.
Yes.
And that just, you know, underlies the whole point of, you know, talk to your kids, talk to your friends, talk to your family about environmental matters, concerns, because it's important. And they will get interested and excited and passionate about the things that you care about as well. So
they're never too young to start to learn.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's another way that we can be activists. It's
absolutely. Just, oh, yes. I mean, I think that's where we start.
Yeah.
We start in our own home.
Right.
And then we teach our children.
Yes. Well, you've done amazing. You've had an incredible career. Cheers, Leonard. I'm so glad and thankful for you coming in today. I just want to close out by saying I love and adore you and appreciate you and everything that you've done. Thank you for being such a wonderful friend and such an incredible activist. I think you aced this challenge. I had no doubt.
It's easy having friends like you, and thank you for being such a wonderful friend to us.
Oh, here, we'll cheers that again. All right, folks. I'm Myella Manassian, your host.
I'm Leonard Grossberg, the guest.
And we're with Tiny Climate Challenge Podcast. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts, or you can find me at tinyclimate.com.
Stay safe and wear your masks.
That's right. And remember that small changes can lead to big results in ensuring a tiny climate. Sending you all our greatest and best eco love.
Now, for the first time in my life, I truly believe my dreams are possible.